Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you live, straight from the whipping up a poetic fusion of life, love, laughter, inspiration, motivation, education, and mental stimulation. With a cherry on top, with our weekly hot topics on everyday relations, welcome to Poetic Energy Blog Talk Radio, with your host, your Poetic Energy herself, bringing the electric current with her own poetic flow, weekly featured guests, and open mic segments. She promises to keep the currents and the waves live at all times. Here on Poetic Energy Blog Talk Radio.
Poetic Energy Blog Talk Radio.
The number to chime in and express yourself is 917-932-8881. That's 917-932-8881. Non-U.S. listeners, dial 1-877-218-1183. That's 1-877-218-1183.
Well, good afternoon, Detroit and all our global listeners. Welcome to the Poetic Energy Network station with your host, Miss Michelle E. Alford, also known as Miss Poetic Energy in the poetry world. I am so excited this evening because we have a great featured guest for this evening. I know many of you have been highly anticipating this interview, and I am so happy to have her join us on the show today. She is a native Detroiter, and she is an award-winning film and television writer and producer. She has won many awards for many of her works. Her original film, The Killing Yard, starring Alan Alda, premiered at the Toronto Film Festival and was nominated for a host of awards. How awesome is that? She was nominated for an Edgar Award and won a special media award from the American Bar Association for the film. And she has another film that premiered in October of 2011, in regards to teenage bullying. And you know that's a topic that's really being broadcast abroad, and so many things are being affected by that. But she made a film about it entitled The Girl Fight. So we are highly anticipating her talking a little bit about that. And that particular film garnered a Directors Guild of America Award for the director, Stephen Gyllenhaal. And I am so happy to have Ms. Bonnie Garvin join us here from all the way from California to talk to us about her career as a screenwriter. Please, Detroit, help me welcome Ms. Bonnie Garvin to the Poetic Energy Network station. Hello, Ms. Garvin. How are you this afternoon?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm so
good.
Excited about you being on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me.
I really want to just jump right in because
sure.
We have so many people we're highly anticipating, so I'm looking forward to them calling in and asking you as many questions as they can.
I like questions. Okay.
Let's start off by letting the listening audience know a little bit about you, those who don't know who Ms. Garvin is. Tell us a little bit about who you are.
I'm hardly a household name. I doubt that very many of them actually really know me, but, I grew up in Detroit. I came to writing kind of late because I already had, at that point, a career working as a publicist. At that point, there was, when I lived there, there was a theater in Birmingham that had just opened up a professional, legitimate theater, and I was doing the PR and advertising for it. And really, quite happy, but I wasn't really sure it was something I could imagine myself doing my whole life, and just started taking some classes. I'd graduated from Wayne. I went back and started working on a master's, just taking some random classes that interested me, and kind of mistakenly ended up in an advanced playwriting class and wrote the first thing I ever wrote, and I'd never really thought about writing before, and ended up to be a finalist for the Eugene O'Neill Award, which is, was very prestigious. And it was the first time I'd ever done anything that I enjoyed, so much. I just really, really loved writing. And so from there I thought, well, I really like doing this. This is something I can imagine doing the rest of my life. But I thought, well, I'm never going to be able to make a living as a playwright because I wasn't going to be Neil Simon. So how was, you know, but I felt like films were something I knew. I mean, I really didn't know anything about playwriting, at least movies. You know, I felt I was familiar with. I grew up with movies, loved movies, saw everything whenever I had any opportunity. So I felt that would be something I'd be more comfortable with. And then, you know, then it became kind of a long process to writing, getting myself known, getting agents, breaking into the business. I mean, that was a whole, that's a whole separate issue from writing. And that is, you know, how you break into the business. So I really, it's very funny because I thought back then, you know, after 6 months and I'd be earning a living. And a friend of mine always teases me because he's a very successful screenwriter. And he said when he first met me, he said, I didn't have the heart to tell you that you better plan on like 10 years before you earn a dime as a writer. And in fact, he was absolutely right. I think it was exactly 10 years before, I mean, that I earned enough to, you know, that I could stop doing other things and support myself as a writer.
The transition, you say you start off as a publicist.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and you kind of just transitioned almost immediately into the writing, or
I had a day job, and then at night I came home and wrote because I was taking classes at night, and that's when I started writing. And once I started writing, I just loved it. So I knew I wasn't going to give up my job because I didn't have any idea if I was going to ever be able, I didn't even know what it meant. I mean, this was like in 1980. I mean, you know, there was no internet, there were no competition. I mean, when I would tell people, they would just think that I was nuts. Mainly, why would I want to give up a nice job that I had to go out and try and figure this out? But I was, you know, really obsessed with figuring it out. So, you know, I started writing, trying to make contacts with people. For a while, I moved out to California. I lived here. My husband and I commuted really to me. I lived out in California for 6 months back in, I don't know, like 1981 or something, to try and make contacts and figure out how do you break into the movie business. So, and then, you know, eventually I my husband and I moved away because I really wanted to pursue this, and he was very, very supportive. And, you know, and then it was another kind of journey. And that was, you know, really to get myself established as a writer. So that was my transition. And all the while, you know, I was at the same time while I was working full time, I was writing, and I was also really, I mean, it became clear to me a lot of the business is about making contacts and who you know and getting in the door because, I mean, it was competitive then. It's even more competitive now.
Absolutely. What started when you first sat down and decided that you wanted to begin your first story? Tell us a little bit about what that was like, because a lot of times there are writers who just don't know where to begin, and when they have something, an idea in place, they don't know how to get started with it.
That's a really good question, because one of the things I always tell my students, and this is why I also really believe that everybody's a writer. Well, or at least it's really a question of, do you want to develop that skill or not? I mean, everybody has the potential to be a writer because we all have stories inside of us. We may not even realize it, and it's a question of being able to access them and write them and do a good job, right? But because I had never thought about writing, so I didn't have an idea when I went into a class. I mean, I ended up in this class literally by mistake, and the teacher manipulated me into staying because I had gone up to her and went, I don't want to be a writer. Everyone in the class is a writer. I don't have any ideas. I'm not going to come back next week. And she said, no, I really want you to stay. And she kind of, and I was embarrassed because I didn't want to, at that point in my life, I was very into pleasing people and didn't, kind of knew her through some politics, and I didn't want to not show up the next week, so I just bit the bullet and did it. But I had nothing to write about because I'd never thought about writing. So what the class that week, she had said something like, write a scene. So I wrote a scene, and never having written a scene, not even knowing a scene was. And the scene, the only thing I could think of, I made up something out of some experience of my own. I mean, something that I cared about, and which at that time was I had some years earlier been an activist, very active against the war in Vietnam. So I wrote something that I made up about that experience, a scene. And that scene ended up to become the last scene in a play. I mean, because after I wrote it and we read it in class and I began thinking about, well, what came before that scene? I mean, how did we get to the end of that play? And so that was the thing I first wrote. And then, I mean, so one of the things I always try and encourage people to do, and everyone, I mean, I teach at USC, we are constantly pushing students, and very few of them do this, is write what you know. And that doesn't necessarily mean write your life, although it can, or write your own experience, which it can, but write the stuff that you really care about. And that's what I really see. What I see in the first play that I wrote was not the technique and skill that I have now as a writer, but it was, there's so much passion, honesty, you could really feel that I care, that is so different than how I write now. In some ways, when you learn stuff, it kills the natural, it's weird. You learn the craft of it, right? You learn story structure, and you learn these things, and they become in your head, and somehow then you have to make your head and your emotions connect. But then I had no technique. I only had raw kind of emotion and truth that went on the page. And when I read it now, I can't even believe I wrote this. It seems so not like me, you know? But so that's why I think the best thing that people can do is find something that they really care about. And then, you know, it can start from, in my case, you know, I cared about this particular, the end of the Vietnam War. Well, I'd been an activist. What did that feel for people? I started thinking, what did it feel about for me? You know, like to have this experience that's now over. My whole life is in transition. And did I feel like it was success? Not. I mean, so I started from something, and then I started making something up out of that. And so I think if you look around and the world around you, what do you care about? You know, and begin to – everything you're writing – it's about you. I mean, you may not realize it. It may not be conscious, but, I mean, it's coming from you, so it represents some aspect of your personality or your values or whatever it is, and that's great. You know, people are always trying to think, you know, I'm going to be the next Quentin Tarantino or the Spielberg, and I'm going to write this big sci-fi thing, and no, you know what? You're not. Not at the beginning. I mean, that's not what happens. That's not how Steven Spielberg got his break, by writing a story about a man being hunted by a truck. There was one person in the whole movie, and the other person was a truck. So don't. It's really, you know, you're not going to be Quentin Tarantino or Steven Spielberg, because those people, Quentin's Quentin, not you. You've got to be whoever you are, and not try and be somebody else, but to be truthful to your values, your vision, your way of seeing the world. We already have Steven Spielberg. We don't need another one.
Absolutely. You know, it's amazing that you say that, because a lot of times people who aspire to write get into screenwriting, they try to be like someone else, and then therefore they don't realize that they're blocking their own creative process, because they're trying to be this person and not themselves.
Absolutely. And you know what? And the thing is, and when you read it, I mean, all I ever do, I feel like my entire life is reading other people's scripts, because I teach. And, you know, and then people also come to me, you know, for help, and I consult and all that. So I feel like my whole life is reading scripts and giving people notes. And, you know, the thing, when you read stuff, particularly when you read a lot of it, you immediately, the difference between people that really have their own fresh voice and people that are derivative, I mean, you see it right off the bat. And believe me, you don't get read. What happens is, all over town, there are people who are paid to read your scripts. I'm sorry to break it to people, but big executives are not home reading scripts of unknown writers on weekends. That is not happening. They all have readers, and those readers are taking home, you know, 50 scripts that they have to report on. So what happens is, they open a script, they start reading it, and if you don't grab someone, they're by page 10, page 15, it's done. It's history because they got to get through that pile. And that's how people, their attention span is that of a gnat anyway. So if you haven't engaged them, it's over for you. So
yeah,
you really have to know. I mean, screenplay writing is so different than other. I mean, in some ways, all storytelling is the same. There's certain aspects of it. But screenplay writing, because it is, you know, limited to a certain amount of pages and how long and, you know, all of those kind of things that you have to do to achieve a successful screenplay are very specific. So, you know, the best chance you have is going with something that you're going to be rewriting it 100 times, so you better like it and you better care about it because you're going to be doing it a long time if you're lucky.
Well, I am so glad you talked about that process because that leads me into my next question. The Killing Yard, which was in your original film, tell us a little bit about that process and what made you write that story and how you came up with, you developed that into a great, you know, award-winning film.
It was actually based on a true story of a Detroiter, of two Detroiters, as it turned out. One was now deceased attorney named Ernest Goodman, who was a civil rights attorney, a well-known civil rights attorney in Detroit. And I had known him for many, many, many years, but really never thought of him as material. I mean, until I lived in L.A., I was living here, and a friend sent me the Detroit News, I think it was, on their Sunday newspaper had done a cover magazine story on him and his life and his very, you know, historic cases. And I read it, and I suddenly, it was weird, like seeing him in a magazine as opposed to just seeing him as a friend. I suddenly went, oh, I mean, that's a great story for, you know, there's some really interesting stuff here. And I had gone into some producers had read a spec script of mine and had wanted to meet with me to see if I'd come up with something that they could develop with me. And I went in with talking about Ernie, and they really liked the idea of doing something about him, character like him. And then we decided that, you know, I wasn't going to do a biopic, so I had to find one case that was sort of emblematic of his life. And I chose a case that was, he had defended a African-American guy who was actually a Detroiter, but was in Attica prison for accused of starting the uprising and killing these two white inmates that were killed in the course of it. So that story seemed to be perfect because, I mean, that's the kind of work Ernie always did. So they gave me money to develop the script, and I developed the script, and the script got sold pretty soon afterwards to Warner Brothers for Joel Schumacher because he was going to direct it. And then right after and I was just beside myself, needless to say. And then about a month later, Warner Brothers, where he had a deal, bought the book A Time to Kill, which was this huge John Grisham book, which also was an interracial courtroom drama, just same as mine. So it was going to be do the script of nobody or do the script from John Grisham's book. So he chose John Grisham's book. And then my script just languished there because they always said, oh, they're going to make it eventually. So I just literally drove them and the producers insane to get it back. I nagged them. We've got to sell it somewhere else. I kept on them. It took years, literally years. And finally, Showtime wanted to do it. And by the time they finally decided they were going to make it, they said, okay, we'll make the movie, but if one of three people want to do it. And they picked Paul Newman, who had already said he would not do a cable movie. And the second one they picked was Robert De Niro, who said he wouldn't do a cable movie. So they wouldn't even read it because, they wouldn't even listen to the offer. And the third one was Alan Alda, who fortunately wanted to do it because I was already out of the running. I was already down on two out of three. So from the time I had first written it and started developing it to the time it actually to cameras rolled was 10 years.
Wow.
And then after that, Even with, you know, I went to Toronto with it. It was getting, I mean, we were having this huge premiere at the Museum of Broadcasting in New York. Former Governor Cuomo was coming. It was like this big event. And then while I was in Toronto, September 11th happened. So the movie never got its premiere to begin with. After all 10 years of waiting, it never happened.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they ended up showing it on Showtime and all that, but all the everything got pulled for it. They had to pull all the publicity, everything, because the movie dealt with a prison massacre. It was really not a good time for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so then Alan had to go on and make the statement that they had to show before the movie so people wouldn't get flipped out. It was just amazing.
You know, it's wonderful that story still came and still came up some good, and you won awards for it.
People saw it. You know, I mean, it wasn't what it was. It could have been, but you know, that's life.
Do you think that you said it took a 10-year process? Is that really something that a common pattern of for to take a film, you know, when you're writing screenwriting, does it take typically that long of a process, or is it just because of everything that's involved?
You know, it always takes way longer than it should, or than you think it will. Occasionally, things get made really fast. It really is the fluke. And when I say fast, from the time you've written it, submitted it to someone, someone buys it, it goes into production. I mean, that could be 6 months to a year. But usually, I mean, I don't know anybody I've heard stories once in a while that happens. But every single person I know, it generally doesn't take that long. I mean, I have something right now that somebody wants, and I'm still waiting for the next piece to come together, because then the next person has to read it, and then the next person. I mean, so you're always waiting for people to read stuff. That's the other thing. And it's never one person. You know, it goes to one person, and then one person moves it up the ladder to the next person, and then they move it up the ladder to the next person, because generally stuff doesn't get submitted right at the top of the person who's making the decision. So you have to be patient, and you have to think of it in the long term, and you have to keep writing. I mean, if you're going to think you're going to write one thing and then that's – I mean, it may, so I really would not be banking on that. So, you know, you have to do it. That's why I say you have to have a passion for it. You have to be – like the script that we're talking about, The Killing Yard, I really had an emotional investment in getting that made and done, and it was worth the – I'm not kidding. I must have done. I did so many rewrites that Alan Alda had to tell me to stop. I mean, I was insane, because I was like, no, but I can make this better. I know. I mean, then I was just. You get to the point where no, please let me change it. I know I can make it better. It was nutty. I mean, so it. But that's part of the process. So if you really hate it, you're not going to be making it better. And you're going to be thinking, oh, my God, year 10, I'm going to kill myself. But, you know.
You know, it's funny that you talked about having to show your writings to many people. With that process, you know, something that you have written, is there ever a fear of someone from you taking parts of your what you have written and using it for their own, or perhaps taking it and not giving you the credit? Was that ever something that you had to deal with?
You know, I actually had. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Yes, and I have actually had that happen. And the thing that it happened on, as luck would have it, went on to win an Emmy Award.
Oh, wow.
But you know what? That's something. I mean, what had happened was years ago, before when I first started writing, and you know, before I got going, someone I knew introduced me to someone who's actually from Detroit, and who's very successful. And the person had read, and I was working on a script, and I had showed it to her, and she said it was really interesting, and blah 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 blah. But this is when I was starting, and I knew. I mean, the script had a lot of problems, but I knew that it was a really interesting idea. And then and I met her in California. She was working in the business. She was a television executive. And then when I went back in Detroit one day, like a couple of years later, I was reading the newspaper, and there was a big article on her and this movie that she was had developed that was coming on Sunday night. And I started, I thought, oh, look, here, you know, here's an article about so-and-so, and my husband and I are reading it. And then suddenly they talk about the movie, and then they say what it's about. I went, wait a minute. I mean, and believe me, there were not two. Just, it wasn't like, oh, they're both about two people falling in love. This was a big thing, such a big thing that it went on to generate a lot of conversation because it was a topic that nobody had really talked about on TV, and it was like a whole thing. So she got so much attention for it, and I went insane, needless to say. But what I realized was that here I was, this person in Detroit that had no, you know, street cred, and she was a big TV producer, and what was going to end up happening at the end of the day was she'd still be working and I would be seen as a troublemaker. And you know, and the other thing is stuff is really, really hard, you know, to prove, because a create, you know, an idea is the most you know, is flying around. There are more ideas flying around than bees, you know? I mean, they're just, so you have to either register stuff, which is something that I didn't do, and you also have to be willing to fight about it. I mean, it happens all the time, and a lot of times it happens, and the truth of the matter is no one stole it from you. You just both happen to have the same idea, you know? Because how often have you gone or turned something on and went, oh, I thought of something like that, or I once was, you know, but you didn't and they did.
Absolutely.
So it happens. It doesn't really happen all that often. And even in the situation I'm talking about, they stole the idea. It wasn't exactly the same characterizations and things. It was more of that. So, you know, but I think you still have to be selective in who you give stuff to. You know, and why are you giving it to them? You know, that you're not just sending stuff out willy-nilly. Because the other thing is, you know, people aren't – someone said to me, I'm working with a student in Germany who's really done amazingly well and has grown so much as a writer. I can't believe it given the language problem. I'm just amazed. And he said to me, well, don't you think that this is something that Tom Hanks would like? Maybe I'll just send it to him. So then I had to write him a very long email explaining it doesn't work that way. So, you know, it really, the getting in the door, you know, I mean, it is such a difficult thing. And it's sort of that thing, well, you know, how do you get an agent? Well, you because you sold a script. Well, how do you sell script? Well, because you have an agent. I mean, it's like, you know, one of those kind of conundrums. So you have to learn how the business operates so that you can do the best thing, you know, for yourself to break into it. Because if you don't know sort of the rules and you're spending your time sending scripts to Tom Hanks, you're wasting a lot of money in postage.
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought that up because I find that a lot of people just send off information and not knowing whether it's going to be, you know, looked at all.
Well, I see people, because I live here, people, believe it or not, literally drive around with scripts in their car, and I have seen people where I've been in restaurants, you know, and like one time I was in a restaurant, and you know, Renee Zellweger is sitting there, and she's by herself, and she's having lunch, and I'm having lunch with somebody, and somebody bumps into her, they go out of the restaurant, and 5 minutes later they're back, and they literally handed her a script. I mean, do they really, yeah, and that's what she's going to do now, is, I mean, that would be the last thing you do because, number one, she already hates that person for having interrupted her at lunch to give her a script.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't work that way. You're not going to be the one who she meets at lunch and say, oh, okay, I'm going to do it. It's not going to happen. So,
yes,
you know, figure out, it's fine. I mean, it's great to be audacious and think of something different, but that isn't it, you know. So you really do have to learn what the rules are and the best way to play the game for you.
Absolutely. Well, Bonnie, it appears that we have a couple of callers. Are you up for taking some calls right now?
Sure, absolutely.
All righty. Welcome, caller from the 313 area code. You are on the air with with Michelle E. Alford, and of course our very special guest, Ms. Bonnie Garvin. Who do we have on the air?
Oh, Francis.
Hi, Francis. How are you today?
I'm doing fine.
Hi, Francis.
Hello. Yes, I would just like to ask one question. I want to know what kind of stories most appeal to the Hollywood format.
Well, that's a good question, but the problem with the question is that that's always changing. You know, it's like a friend of mine called and said to me, well, I had a meeting with so-and-so, and they're looking for X, Y, and Z. And I said, yeah, but the problem, by the time we come in for X, Y, and Z, in time to make it, they won't be looking for X, Y, and Z anymore. Because what happens is they're into the thing of the moment. So the word in town now is what people are buying, is they're buying what's called tentpole movies, which are big franchise, you know, Spider-Man, things that Lorax that can be tied into 600,000 product placements. That's one thing that's very, very big. And the other thing is, or then you go into the small thing, which is if you're going to try and do an indie thing and raise money, then you really need a budget that's under $3 million. Mm-hmm. Because the other thing is, at a certain, it's harder to raise money at $3 million. It's harder to raise $3 million from an established Hollywood type of person than to raise $20 million. Because there's not enough profit for them in low-budget films, so people don't want to put their money into it. Mm-hmm. So it's very difficult. But what I always say to people is what people are always buying, even when they don't know that they're going to be buying it, is stuff that you write that, again, that you care about and that has something that's original to say. Because that breaks through sort of the tedium of all the people that are trying to write the next tentpole movie and can't. It's like all my students will say, you're not ready to write a science fiction thing. You're not ready to write a complicated murder story with a lot of plot twists and characters as your first script. You've never written anything. It's too complicated. They want to do it, and then it's just a total disaster. So I think they would have been much better off writing something that they cared about that reflected their vision rather trying to copy somebody else, and it's not working. So that's why a little when people try and think, well, I'm going to write what they're buying, what it is today, by the time you write that tentpole movie and show it to anybody, now a year and a half from now, for all we know, all they're buying is, you know, dramas. Although that'll never happen, but theoretically.
All right, Francis, was your question answered?
Yes, thank you.
Are you
okay.
Thank you so much for tuning in.
Thank you for calling. You know, I should also mention for the people that are in your area, you know, that I'm doing a one-day workshop on April 14th. And if people are interested, you're more than welcome to contact me at Bonnie@fromideatoscript.com, and I can send you that flyer, or I have a Facebook page, and we can give all that out at the end and everything. But for those of you, you know, that might be interested, it's very funny. I once did a workshop in Detroit. I loved this. This is one of my favorite stories. And someone came, and this woman was really, really excited. And I mean, I could see during the whole thing. I get people writing, and I don't like to just be a talking head, and I try and get people, you know, involved in their own stories, so that when Monday morning comes around, you're writing and not just thinking, this is too hard. You know, I want people to start something and finish something. And at the end, she said to me, "This has been such a fantastic experience." She said, "I said, really, I'm so happy." She said, "What I discovered here is, I want to write a novel. I don't want to be a screenwriter." I thought that was so hilarious. And you know what? But see, that's how I view stuff. I mean, learning what you don't want to do is as important as learning what you – because you've got to figure it out. And this is how. And hopefully she went home and it inspired her to write a novel.
Absolutely. That's a great point, because sometimes you, in order to – you know, find your truthful path, you have to discover, hey, I don't want to do this, and that way you can eliminate it out of your life and move forward with what you really want to do.
No, it's really true. It's amazing how many people, you know, you get an idea that you think you want to do something. And then you try, and you go, you suddenly, it's, and there's something liberating about that. Because at least you try and you know. I had recently also kind of branched out into writing some essays. I had a essay published in a book last year called He Said What was the name of the book. And then I have an essay coming out in a book this year that's in May called Exit Laughing, which is all about writers writing about humor in the face of death. But when the person asked me to be in the first one, He Said What, I said, I'm a screenwriter. I don't know the first thing about writing a personal essay. And she said, well, I think that this is something that you could really do. Would you think about doing it? And I thought about it, and I thought about it. I thought, well, I don't even have, like, the whole book was about some, it was just women writers writing about a He Said What moment with a man, where some man in your life said something that really kind of spun your head around or turned you in a different direction. And I'm like, I don't even know that I have such a thing. And then I finally thought of one, and I thought, I'm going to try this. And I did it, you know, and now I've done another one. I mean, you realize that it's the limitations we put on ourselves. Maybe it's not my best form. Maybe it isn't. Maybe I'll do more. But you know what? And if I try and if I fail, so what? At least I tried it.
Absolutely.
People are afraid to try stuff.
Yeah, people are. Yeah, they are afraid to try. And therefore, they never know if they could have done it or accomplished it.
Absolutely.
I want to, because it says in your bio that you also have credits in European film. Tell us a little bit about that. How does one transition into American film and then and just really go into European film and be successful at it?
Well, at the time, this was back now in the late 90s. I had already started working in the States, but I was not really happy with the kind of stuff that was being made here and the kind of stuff that I was getting offered. But I'm a big Anglophile and love British television, British indie films. And I thought, well, you know, if that's kind of more my sensibility, why can't I write that kind of thing? And I started sending out inquiry letters to I talked to people I knew, got some recommendations of people that they thought might be willing to take on American clients. I wrote introductory letters introducing myself and asking if they'd be willing to read me. And I got a couple, I got mainly no's that nobody wanted Americans because they said it was too hard to sell their own writers who were European to European audiences. So I had a couple people that were interested, and they both read my stuff. They both wanted to sign me, and I just blindly picked. I had no idea, so I just picked the one that responded first. And then, so it was really through them that I began, you know, meeting people. One of the things I've become very good at is, it's just sort of my personality in general, I never trust that anyone's going to do it, that I have to do it myself. So I've always been good about keeping up contacts and making contacts and sort of keeping a pulse on what's going on. So I had a sense, as you know, from what was being bought there as well. I mean, we have trade things like there's Variety and The Hollywood Reporter, which come out for the industry every day. And I read stuff. So I had some sense of what the marketplace is. Again, you have to know what the marketplace is so that when you're discussing it with people that you sound knowledgeable. I began, what are you looking for? And then they would tell me, and then if I had ideas, I mean, one of the things is that I always have a huge trove. I mean, now, you know, I've been working at it a long time, a lot of ideas. And you learn as a writer that you've got to have those because a lot of stuff never comes to fruition, and the movie and TV business is a lot about pitching ideas. You know, so if people want to work with you because they've read your material, they know, well, that you can, from their point of view, cut the mustard, but maybe this script, you know, they don't want something that's about, I don't know, domestic violence. They want something about who knows what, you know, domestic help. I mean, but they know that you can, they've seen it. They know they like you as a writer. Okay, now they want to hear your ideas. So then you begin, you know, well, I have an idea. How about blah, blah, blah? But But what ended up happening was, I mean, I did a movie in Germany that they bought a spec script, an American spec script of mine, which of all things was a romantic comedy. It was just inconceivable to me that something that the comedy in there would be, I don't really think of the Germans as humorous. But, and the movie did really, it was really successful for them on TV. Like at that point, it was one of their highest rated movies on this network. And I saw it with subtitles. They sent me a subtitle copy. And they did an amazingly good job, I must say, probably a better job than it had been made here on TV. I mean, they had more of sort of the essence of the story. And it was, so it was really weird. I mean, you know, I just did it, and then they translated it. And then they sent me a copy of it with subtitles. It was amazing. And then I've done some other things. Now it's gotten a lot harder there, too. One of the problems has been is that in the last 10 years, the business, like life, has undergone this huge shift because of, you know, the delivery system and, you know, with the Internet and what is it all going to mean. And then there was the whole economic worldwide crash and how has that affected the TV and film market internationally. It has as well. I mean, the thing is the business is always changing. So it isn't just one thing. And what I have found, because I'm in the really fortunate position today, I don't know if it'll be true next week, but today of still being able, you know, still having a career at a time when all of my, I only have one friend that's still working. Of all my friends in the business, they've all gotten kind of written out in a way. I mean, because the business has moved on and they can't sell their stuff. So I think that – I don't think it's because I'm more clever than they are. I just think that the difference is that I have really put energy into finding a way to constantly be reinventing myself, you know, because you just – because you have to be able to keep up with – you have to know what the changes are, and then you have to be able to adapt to them. Otherwise, you know, you just – you get passed on like they've been. And it's really – I mean, they're really good writers. There's no reason for it. I mean, it's just, you know – the fickle nature of this business. So you have to find a way how to stay relevant.
Yes, create your own refreshing moment.
Yeah, no, it's true.
I want to quickly remind our listening audience, you're tuned into the Poetic Energy Network station, of course, with Michelle E. Alfred and our very special guest, Ms. Bonnie Garvin, award-winning TV writer and producer. And I just want to quickly remind you of the call-in number is 917-932-8881. I see many of you are on the switchboard. Feel free to raise your hands, and I will connect you. And if you have a question for Ms. Garvin, she will definitely answer your question. Don't be afraid. And I just want to
I am right, particularly over the phone.
And all of you are in the chat room, thank you so much for tuning in with us this hour. If you have any questions, feel free to also call in. We have posted the information to the event that's happening April 14th. With speaking about that, Bonnie, what can people expect from that workshop? Just, you know, give us a little bit of detail of what they can expect and, you know,
okay, that's a good question. One of the things I like to say to people up front is, I mean, I can't turn you into a writer. I can turn you into a storyteller. You have to decide if you want to write, what your discipline is, how far you're willing to push yourself, how hard, you know, you're willing to try, how many doors you're willing to knock on, how long, you know, that's all stuff I can't do for you. But what I think that the workshop really does is inspires you to find and unlock that person inside, that voice inside that really wants to get out. And one of the reasons I really believe in that is because I do it. Because I'm not somebody that had, I didn't go to film school, I didn't even have, I mean, I graduated college, but I didn't graduate, you know, I wasn't a lit major, English teacher, any of those things. I was just someone that was sort of floundering around. And I believe all I did was I was lucky enough to find a way to get to something that was inside of me and that I love and have been able to fortunate enough to turn it into a career that I can support myself. So what I like to do with people, what my workshops are about, is getting people, turning them into storytellers, understanding what makes a good story. And I do that really right from the beginning. As soon as people register, I start having films that I want them to watch, scripts I want them to read. Then when they get there, those are kind of the reference points. And we begin to, I really begin to analyze stuff and look and show you what it is you're watching, how to break it down, and how, in turn, that you can do it. Because one of the things about screenplay writing, it's, as I said earlier, it's very craft-driven. It's not like a novel where you can go off and decide, you know, where you can spend four pages writing poetically about, you know, the sash on a woman's dress. I mean, a screenplay is not like that. So there are marks you have to hit. So it's a question of understanding that, unlocking that voice, inspiring people to feel like they can do it because they can, and also, you know, figuring out for yourself what your path is going to be. It may not be mine, and it may not be yours. I mean, you have to begin to think in your own way, your own direction, kind of the stuff that you also talk about in terms of your poetry and stuff. That's what it's all about. And tuning into that and, you know, figuring out what your journey is in making it happen for yourself. I'm just really about getting people involved in their own life, in their own creative life, and making stuff happen for yourself. I really believe that everything that has happened to me is because I made that happen. You know, I didn't sit by a telephone. I didn't just dream and have a fantasy about it. I did it and made it happen. And the fact that I can do it, I don't feel like I'm some great genius that, you know, that was just born with this gift. No, I don't think that at all. I actually wish I did, but sadly I don't. And I just think that, you know, I'm somebody that likes to write, and because I like it, I work hard at it, and I think other people can do it too. I don't think it's some great gift that I and, you know, 20 other people have been given.
Bonnie, in this workshop, will you also be showing people how to actually package, I guess, put your writings into the proper format and being able to hand it off if they had an opportunity to hand it off?
Yes, but you know, the truth of the matter is, the format question is one I get a lot. Nowadays, you don't have to worry about formatting. You just have to buy a screenwriting program called Final Draft. And when you have Final Draft, and it might be someone you want to buy and share with someone else who's writing, I think it's like $175, or maybe it's $105. I can't remember because I've had mine for so long. But it's a screenwriting program. There's Final Draft, which is really the industry standard, and there's something else called Movie Magic. But those two programs, I mean, literally, they do it for you. So you don't need to know how to do anything, but except what I advise people to do. If you're going to write a screenplay, one of the first things I would advise people to do is you want to get a half dozen scripts, things that you think, you know, that are interesting to you, and you want to get those scripts. You can get them online. I mean, it's nowadays you can get anything. And you need to read them because you need to understand what it looks like and what the pacing is of a screenplay. That you can literally learn by reading scripts. I mean, my students, I'm constantly making them read scripts. Read scripts. I mean, I can't tell you how many scripts I've read in my life. I mean, you really have to. And it gives you an understanding that you're not going to have just by somebody teaching it. I mean, you really need to just do it, and you should be doing it anyway because you're going to learn a lot from reading scripts. I mean, you know, good scripts. You go online. There's something called Drew's Scriptorama. IMDb has has something where you can get scripts online as well. And so that helps a lot. And then that in the screenwriting program, and that takes care of all your formatting issues. So that's the easy one. It's really about learning, you know, what's your inciting incident? What's your end of act one? You know, where are you going? What are your complications? What's an obstacle? How do you set them up? Where do you set them up? You know, what's character development? What are your subplots? What's an ABC story? I mean, you know, it's those kind of we'll also be going over sort of like those technical marks that are hit in a screenplay.
All right, that's some great information you just gave them. I'm sure a lot of people are jumping for joy from the information that you just gave. I did want to ask you, earlier you spoke about getting your script before the right people or being financed by a certain people, I guess, in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Do you actually set that up, or did you have like a manager or something that helped you get that one-on-one interview with the right person to show your script to? Or
For the majority of my career, I always had an agent or management, but now I don't. I mean, I do have an entertainment lawyer. I've been out long enough that I really do most stuff myself. I have a lot of contacts. There might be a time when I would do. So I don't feel like at this point in my life, it's something that I really need. It's more because I have more access. I think that for people that are just starting, it helps enormously. It really, really does. I mean, it's very hard to get started if you don't have somebody who's repping you, because it goes back into that chicken and egg, who's going to read the script, and they're afraid of getting sued, and then they want it submitted by someone, you know, that they know it's come through an agency. Although there are people, and this is something that people can find out as well, and we'll be talking about in the workshop as well, of like, how do you get yourself read for the first time? You know, how do you get through that kind of break of getting in, you know, all of that stuff. I mean, the truth of the matter is, someone once said this to me, actually it was my manager, that if it was easy, everyone would be doing it, and it's meant to weed people out, and it's not meant to be easy, and you just have to be very determined and committed and make a decision of how much, you know, do you want this, and what are you prepared to do, and how long are you prepared to do it? You know, is this something you're willing to give 6 months? If it doesn't happen, you want to go to engineering school, that's fine. I mean, there's no shame in that. But everybody has to make their own individual decision. And then, again, how you go about it is there's a lot of different paths for people, how stuff ends up. You know, because remember, how you start and how it might all go might take you on a completely different, something that you don't expect happens, you know, just like in life.
I want to get in very quickly the address and information out to the workshop, because there are quite a few people on the switchboard. I think you guys are afraid. You don't have to be afraid, but I understand if you're just tuning in. I want to make sure that you get the information to the workshop. I've also put it into the chat room. You can go to Bonnie's website, fromideatoscript.com, and find out more detailed information there. The address to the location of where the workshop on April the 14th is going to be at Kissimmee Court Hotel, and the address is 610 Hilton Boulevard in Ann Arbor, Michigan. So if you are a Michigan gander, you know exactly how to use your GPS.
But you do need to register, by the way. I do need to, people do need to register in advance, because for many reasons, not the least of which, you have to make sure that I get you all your material in advance. You're paying for that, so you want to make sure you have it. And I want, you know, everybody's got to be registered and prepared, and I've got to check them in through the hotel and the process and the whole thing. So if people have questions, as I say, they're more than welcome to send me an email. It's just Bonnie, B-O-N-N-I-E, fromideatoscript.com, and I'll be happy to answer them for you.
All right, Detroiters, I see you guys here, or Michigan people, I should say, because we have a lot of 248, 313, and 734s.
Yeah. That's good, all over. Yeah, when I lived there was only 313.
Yeah, you know, it's changed so much. We have so
many. I know.
With them.
No, I know. Believe me, I'm the one that needs the GPS.
Very quickly, before we wrap it up, Bonnie, I want to talk about the Writers Guild of America. Tell us about that organization, because I know a lot of people, there are obviously a lot of aspiring screenwriters here on the line tuning in. how does that help a person who wants to get into this business of being a part of that organization? Or can you just become a member? Or
no, you can't. That's the problem. It's one of those things that, you know, it's one of those catch-22 things because, you know, people want you to be in the guild, but you can't get in the guild until you sell something. But the Writers Guild is the professional organization to which all screenwriters are part of, and one of the great things about being a guild member is that then you have an organization behind you to make sure that you get your money and your residuals and your proper credit, so that, you know, the producer's girlfriend who only appeared on the set to say hello to somebody doesn't get the writing credit instead of you. I mean, that's the function of the guild. But the guild, you only join once you actually sell something to, you know, within the parameters of the industry. For example, I mean, if somebody, let's say, did an independent film and they were able to raise $300,000 and wanted to get in the guild, you still couldn't unless the company itself was a guild signatory, because all the major companies in town have to be guild signatories. So then you have an organization to protect you. But and it's wonderful, and it was one of the things, I mean, you know, my thing is I aspired to was to get into the Writers Guild. I mean, so it really is that thing, you know, that then says, oh, I'm a real professional. I mean, so it's great, and it takes time. And it's just, again, it's one of the one of the hurdles you have to jump along the way.
I wanted to bring that out because I know that being a part of the guild is, you know, something very important, and I'm glad you brought up the details about it, because a lot of times people writing, they don't know how to protect things or be a part of associations. They don't know how important it is to be to belong somewhere that industry standard type of organization that helps you along the way.
The other thing is, by the way, though, people can protect their work. I mean, if people will still go to the websites, WGA.org, and there's non-member information as well. For example, if you can still register a script, so that if you write a script and, you know, 2 years later someone, you see that story is being made, you've registered with the guild, and you, in fact, can, you know, now, if you decide you want to sue, you have, there's your proof, you know, and then it's been registered with the organization that represents writers. So that's a very good thing to do, whether you're a member or not. I think it only costs $5 more to register for non-members than members. But there may be other things that you can go and look on, you know, that may answer some questions. They probably have some lists of maybe signatory lists of all the companies that sign on with the guild, you know, different things.
Oh, that's some great information, Bonnie. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Sure.
We have come to that time. There's 2 more minutes remaining in the show. Are there any last-minute parting words or inspiring words you would like to leave with many of the aspiring screenwriters that's tuned in before we go?
Sure. You know, mainly it is, I just like to encourage people to write. I mean, it doesn't really matter if you turn into a screenwriter or not turn into a screenwriter, an essay writer or not an essay writer. It's such a freeing kind of a thing to be able to reach inside yourself, do something, take a blank piece of paper and turn it into something. I mean, it gives you a kind of self-satisfaction that I imagine people probably get if, you know, they paint or something. But it's really a wonderful thing, and it's something that all of us have. I mean, this isn't the teacher marking up your thing with red pencil, you know? I mean, this is your expression, and those kind of childhood experiences sadly scar people, you know, and then they're afraid. But everybody has it. It's a gift of language is fortunately something we all have it, and you just need to be able to access it and use it, and I think you'll get a lot of comfort and joy and personal satisfaction out of it.
Thank you so much, Bonnie. I just want to personally thank you for agreeing to be a featured guest here on the Poetic Energy Network station. You gave out a lot of valuable information, and you were certainly a pleasant guest to have on the show.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
I'm so looking forward to the many of you that are tuned in. So make sure you go out and support the workshop, because as you can hear, you are going to get a lot of great, valuable information and more great detail. Remember, the website is www.fromideatoscript.com. You must register so that you can get your materials in ample time. The address is Kensington Court Hotel, 610 Hilton Boulevard, and that's in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Please make sure you write that information down. You can also make sure you can contact us on the fan page, Bonnie, directly, or you can leave a message here on the website, and we'll definitely make sure you get that information. Or, as always, the archives that you can listen to. So this is why we're making sure that we reiterate that, because many of you are in the chat room and you can see the information. So feel free to follow that link and take that information with you. Again, thank you so much, Bonnie, for being on.
Thank you.
We appreciate you and all the great information that you gave us today. And we're going to say have a great rest of the evening, and you've been tuned in to the Poetic Energy Network station with your host, Ms. Michelle E. Alfred. Have a great evening.
Good night.
Good night.